This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, I'm Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, action, exploitation, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1970s to today. Be sure and check out reallyawfulmovies.com for reviews, interviews, lists, and terrific movie giveaways.
Way, and we desperately need your help. Roll up your windows. Turn on your lights and follow the police car at the entrance of the theater. Please keep calm and cooperate with the authorities. Do you read me?
What happened that night? Science made its greatest mistake. What unknown terror was born that night. What is the terrifying mutant that strikes from behind the shroud of night? That night. That night of the Lepus. A night of total terror, more shattering than your strangest nightmare. What caused the unnatural death, destruction, and panic? That night of the Lepus. Janet Leigh. Stuart Whitman. Rory Calhoun and Paul Fix. Night of the Lepus. Kill one and thousands take their place. What devil creatures growing weight and size every day are hidden behind the eyes of horror? What can stop them? Night of the Lepus. From MGM.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 38, Night of the Lepus. Jeepus, creepus, lepus. Lepus is Latin, for those of you who don't know, for rabbit. So this is a killer bunny rabbit movie from
yes,
the 70s.
Indeed. I mean, in a previous episode, we had the pleasure of talking with Mike Mayo, the author of the...
Yeah, the horror show guide. He's a syndicated film critic and author, and he tipped us off to the wonders of Night of the Lepus.
Yeah.
He said it was one of his favorite naturalistic animals run amok horror films.
He said it was one of his favorite bad movies, period.
Yeah.
I mean, the reality is, of course we love bad movies. We also love animal attack movies. I mean, we've talked about many. We've written about many.
Mm-hmm.
We've got your alligators. We've got your piranhas.
Yeah, your rogue, your Komodo dragon.
Yeah.
You're in the shadow of Kilimanjaro. Like,
yeah,
you name a species.
Yeah,
that's attacked people. We've
Empire
probably
the ants.
Yeah.
Right, there's
the nest.
Still my favorite food, the gauze. We got just about every animal in the kingdom. But I mean, so this is Night of the Lepus. I mean, this is killer rabbits. And I gotta say, I mean, the rabbit is not the most fearsome of species.
and one of the more delicious of species.
I would say so.
We had
a
grilled rabbit in a Portuguese restaurant here in West End, Toronto.
Man.
It's delicious.
The first time I ever tasted rabbit was when I was in Cuba. And I gotta say, man, I went out for seconds, thirds, fourths, fifths. I paid for it later on that night, but,
you gotta trade it to the water.
Trade to the porcelain goddess, what I mean, you know, despite the plethora of little bones, I really enjoyed my rabbit. You know, I gotta say, I mean, we just finished watching Night of the Lepus, and to this day, I still maintain that the scariest rabbit I've ever seen on screen was Monty Python the Holy Grail.
Yes.
It's a killer rabbit. He's not a rabbit, he's vicious.
Yeah.
But this movie is this is kind of infamous in the sort of annals of bad cinema because...
Annals? Anals?
Anals. Yeah.
Both. In the anus of bad cinema. I feel like we bent over and took one with this movie.
But exactly,
quite hilarious.
Yeah, this was not an AIP production. This was not a Corman production. This was made by a major studio, MGM, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. This was filmed in 1972, I believe, and it actually had some stars in it. Some people...
Yeah, it had some high wattage star power. Mm-hmm. It had Janet Leigh, obviously best known for taking the knife in the shower in Psycho.
Oh, I think I say best known for taking it from Tony Curtis and siring Jamie Leigh.
Oh, okay, the mom of screen queen Jamie Lee Curtis.
But yeah, best known for Psycho, so Janet Leigh is in this one. Kind of inconsequential, I would say. She didn't really do much of anything, did she?
Yeah, well, I think she was just happy to work at that point, because in this period in the 70s, you had all these sort of disaster movies where has-been actors would just show up. I'm thinking like The Towering Inferno, mm-hmm, or The Poseidon Adventure, where you just have these like Lauren Green types who just can't get much work except for some schlocky disaster movie, and then presumably that was the case with her here. Like, just any sort of paycheck will do.
Yeah. And speaking of has-beens, we have the one and only Rory Calhoun, which until recently I was most the only familiarity I had with Rory Calhoun was from the episode of The Simpsons with the very famous "See my vest."
Made from real gorilla's chest. Yeah.
Where Mr. Burns said, "See that dog there? I like that dog. He reminds me of a young Rory Calhoun." Yeah. I remember that name stuck to me, Rory Calhoun. But then I saw the film Motel Hell, and this is not Gordon Ramsay's Motel Hell. Mm-hmm. This is a really, really cool movie, and Rory Calhoun, again, way past his prime, played the proprietor of this motel. But Rory Calhoun was a Western star back in the day, back mm-hmm. in the 50s, back in the 60s. Now, in this movie, he, of course, was well past his prime. Terribly obvious dyed hair, trying to recapture some of his glory youthful years. Mm. And in addition to Miss Leigh and Mr. Calhoun, we also have Mr. Kelly.
Yeah, DeForest Kelly, who's obviously, you know, damn it, Jim, I'm a doctor, not a, you know, insert line here, is best known for the Bones on Star Trek, the resident medic of the Enterprise.
Right. And now in this movie, he's Professor Elgin Clark.
Mm-hmm.
He's a professor of something or other.
I don't recall. It might have been, one would think, zoology. I might have tuned out at that point.
Exactly. Yeah. But this is Night of Lepus. So, I mean, basically, this movie starts off with a very sort of like reminiscent of Ed Wood kind of newscast, in the sense mm-hmm. that I think of Planet from Outer Space, where you have Criswell talking about, you know, future events such as these will affect us in the future, and kind of giving us this sort of prologue to kind of tip us off into what's going to happen in this magnum opus we're about to endure. And in this case, we have this newscast talking about the proliferation of the rabbit or the lepus, and how they were introduced in Australia.
Yeah, and how they're taking over, and they're spreading at a wild rate and causing so much damage.
It's almost like they're fucking like rabbits.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, exactly. And from that we go, and then there's a bit of a sort of a, I would say, a ponderous sort of what right do we have to
that whole hubris of man, and how much we should be playing with the natural kingdom, and how we shouldn't really tamper with God's laws or the laws of nature, or what have you name it. And I gotta say, with that that news anchor there, that Walter Cronkite there with his ponderous intro, mm-hmm. he had a phone on his anchor desk. Was that normal for the time? Like, who was going to phone him in the middle of his newscast?
Breaking news. Hold on a second. I got a call right now. Okay, babe, I'll be home in an hour. Oh, yeah, a loaf of bread, a cup of milk, sure, why not, you know? So, yeah, that was kind of ridiculous.
They're getting back to humans messing, mucking about with things they shouldn't be. That's, of course, a standard premise in these types of things. And so, of course, you have these scientists in the deserts of Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, of course, trying to deal with the plague of rabbits. They're causing you know, hell all over the place. Mm-hmm. And there's, of course, money to be made, just as like we saw in the movie The Nest, to rid oneself of a natural pest, mm-hmm. and in which case, rabbits. And previously, I guess they explained away the fact that they couldn't just poison them, you know, like arsenic and old lace, except with, you know, bunnies, because that would obviously get rid of the birds or whatever would eat these rabbits or the predators, or so that explained that away.
It's all about delicate balance.
Yeah, the ecosystem, yeah. Charles Darwin. Yep. And so they decide to distort their hormones.
Well, it so happens that we have this this young couple, although they look anything but young. I mean, you know, apparently they look to be a little bit. I mean, it's funny because the young couple, I mean, they had a daughter who was about 6.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And they looked like they were pushing 50.
Exactly. And there was Gantley and some other actor of note that we don't really know who he is, but he resembled Michael Landon.
Yeah.
And they were some sort of, I guess they're entomologists or something. And they were,
I guess they're, some sort of wildlife biologists.
And they were working on bats or trying to, like, study bats or something. And as it happened, they were in the neighborhood, how convenient. Yeah. And they were conscripted to rid this neighborhood.
Yeah.
This,
if not the immediate vicinity, then at least Australia or wherever they have a rabbit problem. Yeah. And again, rabbits breed like rabbits. Yeah. So and might as well disrupt their hormonal, their pheromones, so they don't, you know, hump one another as readily. So they administer this drug, which is supposed to.
They had a serum. Like, I mean, you know, it, thankfully in these movies, I mean, you either have, like, you know, radiation, or you have the food of the gods. Well, you got the literal food of the gods coming from the earth, or you got a serum. You got just something. Some
Deus Ex Machina to get the ball rolling.
And in this case, they have a serum. And what were they trying to do, that serum again?
I guess they're trying to do a test to see whether this would disrupt the mating habits of the male and female rabbits. Mm-hmm. But, of course, and this is a very poorly run lab, it should be said, because they let their daughter, their Moppet daughter, just wander around. And so, of course, she develops an attachment to some of these bunnies.
She named Romeo.
Yeah, and she wants to keep one as a pet. Now, there was a switcheroo at this point, and unfortunately for everyone concerned, she happened to take the bunny that was given the hormone and use that as a pet. And so she, you know, absconds with this rabbit in her arms, and sure enough, rather than just taking it home to put in a cage, the thing escapes in the desert, and
the rabbit gets loose.
The rabbit gets loose, and rabbits do what rabbits do.
Rabbits do, And before you know it,
there's hundreds of stock footage rabbits rampaging across the southern American desert.
It's funny, too, because, I mean, you know, I mentioned Edward at the beginning. I mean, Edward was notorious for his use of stock footage. I mean, he could not come across a piece of footage he did not include. This film, besides an Edward film, had probably some of the most,
abundant
use of stock footage. I mean, there's so much stock footage. And we'll get to the bovine attack a bit later on.
Yeah.
I mean, that was stock footage that's most egregious. But before that, I mean, you know, Romeo, the rabbit, gets loose and...
ends up in a rabbit hole and starts to make tiny rabbits. Mm-hmm. And at this point, I guess, for whatever reason, this kid didn't seem overly concerned about losing her rabbit. Mm-hmm. I guess she figured there's more where that came from in the lab, but you would have thought, I expected her to just be bawling her eyes at it, but no, she just goes off with her friend, who's sort of a young cowpoke.
Young hick.
He's got a cowboy hat, a little kid. He's probably all of 9. And they start playing around.
And they start looking for Captain Billy. Captain Billy is, I guess you would say, a local celebrity, a gold prospect.
Right? Yeah. So they start looking around in the local mine shaft for Captain Billy.
Yeah.
And
they find Captain Billy.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't find him... sort of on the right side of
of the dirt.
Of the dirt,
the cactus desert dirt. They find him, and he's been ripped to shreds by these hares.
Yeah. And then we have this sort of this very bizarre sequence where it's like, well, was this a dream? Is this a flashback? Mm-hmm. Where the little Moppet all of a sudden is having these, like, post-traumatic flashbacks and seeing these giant carnivorous rabbits and... you know, and then she's reassured by her family. Well, it's okay. You're just in shock, etc. But little do they know that this little town in Arizona is now going to be besieged by hordes and hordes of rampaging, gigantic
bunny
rabbits. Now I say gigantic again in quotes because. Not exactly industrial light and magic. I mean, this is not like, you know, your wet workshop special effects. I mean, did you ever find it convincing at any point? Like, these were large, threatening...
At some point, they did duplicate, I guess, one of the ranch owners' homes with, like, a matchbox to try and, you know... But that didn't sort of conjure up just the scale and scope of these creatures, who at one point, I think, Bones... DeForest Kelly's character said that they had strides of 4 to 5 feet.
Yeah.
Which is absurd, because they basically just did close-ups of the bunnies just to give the viewer the impression they were, yeah, again, the size of wolves, in quotes,
yeah,
as one of the characters
said. Or a saber-toothed tiger.
Yes, it's a strange reference. They took, I guess, when at the crime scene where they found this poor prospector, surrounding him was these tins, and they had been breached by teeth. So this black scientist with a giant afro, he's looking
at... We gotta say the only black character in the entire movie.
It is Arizona.
It's Arizona.
And he says, you know, these bite marks, they had to have been made by... And this is a strange reference to make. A non-extant species. He says they could have been made by something like a saber-toothed tiger.
Did you say non-extant or extant?
Non-extant. Like, if you were a scientist, you said, oh my god, like... This tin has been broken into by... Look at the teeth marks. This is like a... And then if you're in, you know, the Rockies, you'd say, oh my God, it's like a bear or like a, you know, a mountain lion. He could have said any of these. There's enough creatures roaming around that he could have mentioned. Not something that's been extinct for millions of years.
Exactly.
But anyway, but poor, you know, the poor prospector there. Soon enough, the sheriff and local officials find out that there's more deaths.
Oh, yeah.
More bodies came up.
There was a family of four.
Yeah, family of four.
We were not introduced to them. No. But I was like, oh, a family of four. And
there was, I guess, a delivery guy who this giant hairy puppet just just brought him down.
Yep.
Who else? I can't remember, but the body count continues to rise. And, of course, because this is nature run amok, there's lots of competing interests. There's corporate interests. There's institutional. There's a university doing this study with the rabbits, and they don't want it known that their experiment has gone awry, and obviously the bunnies are on the loose killing people. And there's obviously corporate interest too, there's money interest. So, the word is put out not to
alert
the proper authorities, because we said to one another at around the halfway minute mark, why is nobody calling the bloody National Guard?
Exactly.
Like, the bodies are piling up. They have a pretty rough idea of who's doing this.
Yeah.
And even if it wasn't bunnies, if it was mountain lions, whatever it takes, dispense with them. It's a call to action if there ever was one,
indeed.
But not this.
Yeah. But, I mean, eventually the problem becomes, you know, it multiplies so severely that you do have to call the National Guard.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mean, before we get to that, I mean, we got to say, I mean, there's so many scenes of just, like, rampaging bunnies, and again,
yeah,
like,
jumping over trenches.
But I mean, and of course, on the soundtrack, it sounds like it's a herd of buffalo.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But honestly, it could not be any less convincing. I mean, you know, again, you could shoot a close up of a bunny. You could put a
matchstick house beside it.
And
increase its scope. Yeah,
yeah. But I mean, at one point did I ever find anything convincing about these bunnies. I mean, it was like, you know, I mean, if I was standing there on like a deserted stretch of Arizona highway, as Rory Calhoun did it a few points in this movie, and these bunnies were rampaging towards me, looking like they did in this film, I would just fall. I would probably die of hysterics before I would die of, these omnivorous bunnies.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say carnivorous, omnivorous.
Yeah, at one point they're seen chowing down on lettuce and tomatoes.
Yeah.
I don't know where that was, but clearly it wasn't the farm out in the middle of Arizona.
Yeah, they also take over a general store at one point.
Yeah.
And, so eventually they call in the National Guard, and it becomes this big, this big concerted effort to get rid of this scourge. The scourge of these bunnies. And this is quite bizarre. They actually conscripted drive-in theater.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The watchers of a local film. I think it was a Tom and Jerry cartoon, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, that was probably the cartoon before the main feature.
Before the end. So
probably a feature that was better than this piece of shit. But
anyway. Yeah, probably. And they are tipped off by the local sheriff who's got a bullhorn, and he tells the people that killer rabbits are on the loose.
Laser Gilman, there's a herd of killer rabbits coming your way.
As we heard in the beginning of this podcast.
Yeah, so, now, obviously, this day... You know,
and well, they comply immediately.
They could not be more nonplussed. I mean, roll up your windows, turn on your headlights, it's like, sure, why not?
Yeah, sure, killer bunnies, that sounds plausible. Let me I'll get on that, Captain.
Yeah.
And so they, I guess, flash their lights... And as a means of attracting the bunnies. Why they're attracted to headlights, I don't know. It was never explained.
I'm attracted to headlights.
And it's weird also because there's no zoologist who had any explanation like your usually happens. I'm thinking in the Roger Corman production of Alligator, where they have someone say, you know, explain what have you, like the pounds per square inch bite they're capable of, how big they're capable of growing, or just anything. I think Robert Forster, his character, they explained to him that gators couldn't possibly live in the sewer because they're, you know, cold-blooded and they need sunlight, all this stuff. But there's no real science in this movie at all. Like,
damn it, I'm a professor, not a zoologist, you know?
Yeah, apart from, you know, that brother who said, you know, that there's saber-toothed tiger-like in their bite marks. That was kind of shocking. And anyway, they have this plan to direct the bunnies toward the you know, the military, who's by this point dug themselves in, and they're ready to, you know, to face the onslaught of these wild, rampaging stock footage hares.
Yes. So let's talk about the bovine scene, because that yes. was quite interesting. I mean, there was you know, not when you have Lepus on Lepus Homo sapien, actually. Yeah. There's also like Lepus versus horse.
Equine. Yeah, equine. Yeah.
Yeah. So
bovine equine versus leapbine.
Well, leapbine, exactly. So I mean, you know, and you know, there's one scene where, you know, the horses are getting restless because the bunnies are stampeding.
Yeah.
And the bunnies make for work of the horses. Great. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That was pretty cool.
That was cool. Yeah. But there's actually some pretty good gore in this movie. Yeah. You know? But then there's a scene where you see this horde of cows, and you're thinking to myself, oh yeah, we're going to get some good, like, you know, bunny versus cow action. Now, this was just obviously stock footage shots of cows, because at not one point did the scene of the bunnies and the cows match up at all.
Yeah, yeah. Different times of day. Different geography,
different film stock, different everything, you know. So all that happens is that the cows run away, the bovines run away, and there's really no bovine versus hare action. I felt a bit cheated on that one.
As did I.
Yes. So ultimately, look, this is a laughably stupid movie, and you know, I mean, it's funny because we had a discussion beforehand, like, what begat what? I mean, chicken or egg? Because, again, like, you know...
This is a major film studio putting out this just pure dreck that's normally associated with, you know, again, the Corman productions.
Yeah,
and
or,
the,
you know, your AIP studios.
AIP, yeah.
So, were they doing it because of the success of Corman, or is it... I mean, Corman... I don't think Corman was inspired by Neville Lepus to make some of his classics. So.
No, and they came later as well. So, yeah. This might have been inspired by the movies from the 60s, but those were mostly caveats about the proliferation of nuclear warheads and radiation and all this. This seems strangely out of place.
You couldn't say it was inspired by Jaws, because that came after this one.
Yeah.
So maybe this inspired Jaws.
It's possible. Maybe not. I can't think of this inspiring anything other than frequent bathroom breaks and derision.
Maybe having a bigger craving for rabbit stew. Yeah. And derision, of course. I gotta say, Night of the Lepus, I've seen better animal attack movies.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I've seen more entertaining ones. It wasn't terrible. It was entertaining.
Yeah.
It wasn't the be all and end all of bad cinema as I've been led to believe. Sorry, Mike, but I think there's been some other. I still maintain that The Swarm and Food of the Gods are like the two most incredibly ridiculous nature run amok movies.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, there's a monkey movie. I think it's Link with Elizabeth Shue of bad. What was that? Was she in Melrose Place? I'm not sure.
Well, Adventures in Babysitting.
Okay, yeah. In that movie, I think there was a mad scientist who couldn't distinguish between chimps and some other type of ape. And I think they painted the chimp to look like an orangutan. Mm-hmm. And then they passed it off as an orangutan, which is clearly a chimp, or vice versa. I forget which. That's a bad animal attack movie. And also In the Shadow of Kilimanjaro, which features, you know, ridiculous orange puppets as baboons, and they're stopped by, I think, rainfall. And I don't know, I forget, it's been a while since I've seen it. And
yeah, what, but you have reviewed both these films on this
site. I have reviewed, yeah, so they're worth definitely worth checking out.
Well, and, I mean, Link finally made a monkey out of me, I gotta
say. Another Back to the Simpsons, So what would you give, you know, Night of the Lepus?
It's
rather harebrained film.
Yeah, well...
it had to happen sooner or later.
Exactly.
Right?
On a power rank scale of 1 to 5, yeah. 1 being a must-miss, 5 being a must-see, I'm going to put it right in the center, 2.5.
2.5?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say it has its moments. It's a real slow burn. Mm-hmm. I would say probably 3. Well worth checking out. I mean, you will never, ever get a chance to see a horse being eaten by a bunny, ever. Prove us wrong. Maybe there is another case of that. You've seen Peter Cottontail.
Yeah.
How does this compare?
Peter Cottontail was incredibly fun. This is Beaster Day.
Beaster Day. Yeah.
Yeah. The something Cottontail. This is an independent movie made by the Snig Brothers, and I believe it's on VOD right now. And we have a review of it on the site.
It's amazing we have another reference point for something like this.
Yeah, the thing about that movie, of course, that's a tongue in cheek. I mean,
yeah.
The gigantic hair is stop motion, but it's so much fun, and it's very self aware. But also, you know, there's a lot of it's great. I mean, I give it 4 stars. I love that one. This to me is 2.5. It was okay. You know, like I said before, I still maintain that The Swarm and Food of the Gods are the two, like, the holy grail of animal attack movies. Grizzly is really good as well.
Yeah.
What did you learn?
I learned that DeForest Kelly looked really dapper with a bandana / ascot around his neck.
Yes.
I also learned, I'm happy to have learned more about the origins of one Rory Calhoun. Because I feel remiss that I was unaware of his storied Western and cowboy movie career. I'm not sure what he was in other than that one you mentioned, but it must have been Motel Hall and other things. Like in his prime, he must have been. Was he John Wayne of his day?
He was like your sort of like your poor man's John Wayne. Yeah. So Rory Calhoun. From watching this movie, watching the actual version we just saw. I learned a lot of Swedish.
Yeah. there are very few, speaking of extant, species and prints. We've got, you know, this movie is out of print for the most part. The few copies that are out there remaining are, this one happened to be Swedish.
This is a bootleg dub of a Swedish release, and which we rented from our favorite Hot Suspect video, and so there were Swedish subtitles, and so I learned a lot of Swedish.
No Swedish babes, unfortunately.
No.
Swedish bikini team.
No Swedish bikini team, but I mean... As I was watching the the film and I was reading the Swedish subtitles, I learned quite a bit of the Swedish language, and I learned that it's very similar to German.
So, it is, yeah.
Having said that, I will say guten Tag to our listeners.
And we'll see you very soon. Check out more at www.reallyawfulmovies.com, and we'll talk to you very soon.
Take care.
Auf Wiedersehen.